March 2025. Yes. No, it's great to have you here. A turtle is crossing the road when he's mugged by two snails. When the police show up, they ask him what happened. The shaken turtle replied, "I don't know, it all happened so fast." Does it feel like things are happening fast in the world today? Man, as you watch what's going on around the world, you know, some of it's, you know, we have greater communication and we're seeing a lot of things in real time. So it really does move fast. Just the information flow is, it's hard to keep up with. I think some people say, "Brett, why don't you do a prophecy update like once a week?" And there's a couple answers for that. One is I'm a pastor of a large church. And have a lot of things to do. And we do Wednesday nights and Sundays and Saturday nights and a lot of things going on. And that is my main calling. But I do love dive into this. Plus, there's all kinds of good prophecy update people online that you guys can tap into that are very helpful. There's just so much that goes on. I just feel like I'd be parroting a lot of the stuff that people are talking about. But once a month, it gives me a chance to sort of focus on the things that the Lord's stirring my heart about and stuff that I'm interested in. And I'm not going to say our prophecy updates are, you know, purely exhaustive. I'm just once a month, just kind of tapping in and checking in. And that's a little different than maybe some of those that are online every other day that give updates. So I understand that. But things are happening so fast. It reminds me of one of the notions that I think we as Christians and Bible believers need to keep in mind. And I've shared this, you know, before, but this is one of the things that if you're new to prophecy, Bible prophecy, one of the things you got to remember is what the Bible says about the timing. There's a lot given to us about the timing. The first thing about timing is no man knows the day or the hour of the rapture of the church or the second coming of the Lord. It's somewhat of a mystery when that's going to happen. But we are told that we can know the times and the seasons. And that's why we do watch and see what's going on around us. And there's a lot of little puzzle pieces that will fall into place as we get closer to the rapture of the church and the second coming of Christ. So there's clues that we have, which makes it really exciting to me. Sometimes people get, kind of freaked out by some of the language of the Bible, which they shouldn't. This is one. It's Revelation 1:1. It says this. It says, in Revelation, the book that a lot of people look to for wisdom when it comes to the end of time, it says in Revelation 1:1, "The revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave unto him to show unto his servants things which must shortly come to pass. And he sent and signified it by his angel unto his servant, John." The word "shortly" is of great importance there. Now, John heard this, you know, vision, this revelation of Jesus Christ. And by the way, I always like to remind you, Bible prophecy folks, in case you want to don't look like a tourist. Whenever somebody says revelations with an S on the end, newbie, they're a noob. It's not revelations. Everybody says that. It's always amazing. I've heard like people who are really smart Bible prophecy guys call it revelations, but it's actually revelation. It's the revelation of Jesus Christ, which is important. There is a difference, but I won't get into all that tonight. But then the word "shortly" also causes people trouble because Jesus revealed this to John 2,000 years ago. So he was wrong about this, people say. But that's not what this word is really saying, that like just in a little bit, like right after I resurrect and ascend, or after I'm, you know, after John, you live a few more weeks. Some people say that word "shortly" is not appropriate. Well, the word there is the same word used, by the way, in Revelation 22 at the end of the book. So we have the first verse of the book, and then right toward the end of the book, it says, "And he said unto me, these sayings are faithful and true. And the Lord God of the holy prophets sent his angel to show unto his servants the things which must shortly be done." And so again, at the end of Revelation, beginning of Revelation, at the end of Revelation, things that are short. But the word "shortly" is a really fun Greek word. It's that Greek word tacos. And I'm not talking about cheese and meat and hot sauce. I wish I was talking about that, but that's good stuff. But yeah, it's this, the word tacos means quickness. In the Greek. It's interesting. It's where we get our word tachometer. And many of you in your car have a tachometer. Does that measure your speed? No, it's revolutions per minute. It's talking about revving up things. So when you hear a Bible prophecy student or somebody talking about Bible prophecy saying, hey, things are revving up, that's not actually a bad way of explaining it, because that's what John is hearing from Jesus. Things are going to rev up. That is, you know, revolutions per minute. You know, and it basically talks about how many revolutions per minute your engine is doing when you say a tachometer. But that's the idea. We're going to see the closer we get to the end, things are going to rev up is the idea. It's the same concept that Jesus and Paul referred to when they use the idiom talking about the last days, the end times. And you see both Paul and Jesus talk about the woman who's in childbirth. Matthew 24, Jesus said, all these things are the beginning of sorrows. And that word sorrows is a word, it's a Greek word, which means birth pains. Odin is the word, which means birth pains. Same word that Paul would use in 1 Thessalonians 5:3, for when they shall say peace and safety, then sudden destruction cometh upon them as a woman upon a woman with child, and they shall not escape. It's the same idea of a woman in childbirth. What's that all about? Well, what does that have to do with revolutions per minute? Well, it's birth pains per minute. When the baby's coming, things start revving up. The pain increases and the intensity, and then also the frequency. That's the same kind of concept, really. And so what we as those who are looking at what's going on around the world and wanting to be watchmen on the wall and knowing what's going on, one of the things we have to watch for is, are things speeding up? Are they revving up? Is the world getting busier with the things that the Bible says is going to be notorious of the last days? And that's kind of one of the things we're supposed to watch for. Now, things are continually spinning up around the world that all point to the coming of Christ. We see a lot of that. One of those things that we see ramping up exponentially is something that Daniel the prophet talked about. He said in Daniel 12:4, he said, "But thou, O Daniel, shut up." That's something I've heard people say, "Brett, that should be what you should do." No. "But thou, Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book even to the time of the end. And many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased." The last two things mentioned there, many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased. There's debate on what Daniel's saying there. Some would say, you know, the implication is that people will rush around trying to increase in knowledge. You know, our modern world certainly is characterized by people rushing around trying to increase their knowledge. If you actually study, there's a whole world of study about how knowledge has increased and the exponential nature of knowledge. You know, how we, you know, if you see the graph, the XY graph, you know, knowledge increased and it was a flat line almost, you know, from just even, a, you know, 500 years ago, it was still pretty flat. But it's amazing in modern times, knowledge has just skyrocketed exponentially. In fact, it's hard to make a graph that you can actually read because you need a paper the size of this sanctuary to show you how it was flat. And then all of a sudden, it just keeps going up and it skyrockets. Knowledge is increasing. Men are running to and fro. So some folks have said, you know, scientific discovery, you know, things like, you know, that we discover, you know, it used to take a century for people to figure something out. We discover stuff in 2 minutes now. And I'll show you how we do that here in a few minutes. You know, but many people over the years have proposed that there would be an increase in technology in the end times, and that knowledge would get dangerous with men. It sort of reminds us maybe of the Tower of Babel. If you recall the Tower of Babel, God had to break that up because they were coming together. They were doing, you know, things with astrological signs and lining up with the stars and the moon and the sun, and but their languages were all coming together, and God basically had to shut that down. I think that's going to be sort of a mark of the last days in the same way. So the idea is maybe when humanity reaches that point of knowledge that becomes spiritually where God says, that's it, no more. that might just be when the rapture of the church happens and the tribulations period kicks into gear. Francis Bacon and Isaac Newton were both proponents of Daniel 4 being that knowledge would increase. They were guys who said, that's what Daniel's talking about. In fact, Francis Bacon, on the frontispiece of Francis Bacon's In Saturatio Magna, his book, ships of learning were depicted. Those two ships in that picture, if you can see them, were depicted passing by the limits of human knowledge. That's what he was writing about. But with a quote in Latin at the bottom, it's Daniel chapter 12, verse 4. So Francis Bacon really thought that Daniel was talking about human knowledge reaching a dangerous level. And he wrote about that, which is kind of interesting. But I do think, there's some things you kind of wonder if humanity reaches a certain point, I think some of us felt like when we started really messing with genetics and stuff like that, it starts to get kind of dangerous in the way humanity handled genetics. And it still is dangerous, when science gets to a place where God's like, you're messing with my area. I do wonder if there's a point where God just says, okay, no more, time's up. But the other side of the coin of Daniel 4 is more that, in fact, probably most of the Bible scholars would say through the ages, they've understood the last two phrases of Daniel 12:4 as basically the two phrases are a reference to the prophecy itself. That the prophecy of Daniel would be understood more and more as we get through time. And knowledge of how the prophecy would unfold would become more clear. So the question is, what do you think? Do you think it's the unfolding of the book of Daniel or knowledge increasing in the world? Well, if you say yes to either one of those, you have all kinds of evidence that reinforces your view. So congratulations, you're right. But Brett, which one? You're both right. I think they're both right. Knowledge has increased in a crazy level, way more than humanity would ever imagined. We've seen that. But at the same time, you can very clearly see how we see how the prophecy of Daniel, when Daniel wrote it, he says, I don't understand a thing I wrote. And he went off about the king's business. But as the end gets closer, we know mostly what Daniel's talking about now. There's still a few mysteries, but we saw Daniel's prophecy, most of it's unfolded throughout history already. The stuff that's yet to happen is very small that's in the book of Daniel. So I think that's important to understand that either one I think is true. Either way, whatever position you take on that, the thing I want to kind of camp out on a little bit at the beginning here is I believe Bible prophecy implies, when you read the book cover to cover, I think Bible prophecy implies a massive rise in technology. And for the requirements of Bible prophecy to be fulfilled, there's some places it just has to be science reaching Bible prophecy. You almost wonder if Bible prophecy has given some people hints. Do you know when you ever talk about cashless society and you hear about these secularists who want to, map people around the world and put a chip in their hand and you're like, man, you guys have been reading your Bibles. Now they have been reading their Bibles. They could care less about the Bible, but it's almost like they've been cheating and looking at the story in the Bible. Which one came first? I think there's all kinds of technological things in the Bible that are going to have to happen for the end to really unfold the way of the Bible. Let me just give a few quick ones. For example, weapons technology, prophecies, about wars and conflicts in the end times. May involve really advanced military weaponry. Before we had the atom bomb, before World War II, Ezekiel 39 was talking about radioactive fallout from a nuclear battle where they had to put flags by the bodies and nobody should touch the body and special professional people have to come and clean up the bones of the body because they're probably radioactive. Like that's something John and Daniel and Ezekiel, they wouldn't know about the nuclear explosion or radioactive fallout, but the Bible really tracks that quite amazingly. Technology, Matthew 24, verses 6-7, Jesus talked about how nations would rise against other nations. And the idea is there's implications in Daniel and Matthew about the sophisticated weaponry and wartime methods, and that some people, including Antichrist, would worship weaponry. There's a group that's going to worship weaponry, including the Antichrist. We see people do that already. There's a worship of weaponry. Also, like, here's a technological thing. I love this one. In the book of Revelation, chapter 11, verses 3 through 10, remember, we see the two prophets that come back, the witnesses in Revelation 13. And when they're killed, it says the whole world, like the language of the Greek is very clear. All the world saw their death as they were being dragged through the streets of Jerusalem and laid there for 3 days. And all the world would see all at once that they would come back to life 3 days later and come up, we're back. Like, that's gonna be a crazy thing. But, you know, how did the whole world... You know, how's the whole world gonna see that event at the same time? You know, I remember, you know, when I was a kid, you'd see, you know, reports from Vietnam, but those weren't necessarily live. We'd see a day or two later, or we'd get the film or whatever. But it was after Vietnam. I think one of the first ones I remember, I think it was the Somalia and Mogadishu. Do you remember when we saw in real time for the first time, they were running onto the beaches with it right next to our soldiers going in. And we're like, wow, we're watching this in real time. This is crazy. But that was a lot. That was back during Bill Clinton's presidency. Nowadays, we're watching stuff that's just happening around the world and the cameras around the world. And it's just so easy to imagine. It's not even hard to imagine. But for what Revelation 11:3 said, that would take technology to make that happen. So nowadays we've got, you know, maybe, have you seen some of this virtual stuff? You can see it looks as real as ever. Like, you're right there. You know, who knows what when the two witnesses are slain in Jerusalem in Revelation 11, who knows what everybody's going to see all at one time? It could be anything. It could be TV. It could be your iPhone. It could be, 3D. Like, you're right there with this, technology that we have now. Another, bit of technology, cashless society, mark of the beast. That's something we have been talking about since I was a little kid. When I was a kid, everyone's going to get a barcode on their forehead or wrist. Now we kind of laugh at that. Although your iPhone recognizes a barcode pretty good today, still. But, you know, there's so much more technology. The mark of the beast described in Revelation 13, 16 through 18 is associated with a system. Technological system where people can't buy or sell without a mark. So some think this could involve advanced surveillance technology, including biometric identification, some kind of really high-tech chip or a quantum dot, if you know what that is. There's even a tattoo that's under your skin now that holds all kinds of information, but you can't see it on your skin. It just needs to be scanned and bada bing, they'll know your health history and all the things. Like, the technology is way past what you'd need for Revelation 13 to happen. Here's another one. Do you ever wonder what the image of the beast is going to be? Does that ever make you curious? There in Revelation 13, the image of the beast, that's always been hard for me to figure out. What is that going to be? It's a description of the Antichrist and the beast and the false prophet. In Revelation 13, 15, it says, "And he had power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed." So there's this mysterious thing during the tribulation. We'll be in heaven at that point. The rapture of the church happens. Then we, when we're in heaven and the marriage feast of the Lamb, meanwhile, back at the Hall of Justice on earth, you've got this Antichrist, you've got this unholy trinity. You know, you've got, the Antichrist, the beast, the false prophet. But there's gonna be this image of the beast that'll be lifelike. And could this be some sort of tech that will be used for this purpose? What kind of tech is that? Well, I'm not 100% sure. There's a lot of weird things. Maybe you've seen the Eye in Las Vegas. It's a big dome over, it's a new building. There's giant dome, but it's a giant video screen. You drive into Las Vegas and eyeballs looking around. It's like 50 times bigger than our building. That's weird. It just looks like this. I mean, there's so many weird things. Have you seen the giant statue? They travel around the world and you can get in a booth and you can move its arms and it's like, 300 feet tall and you can move its head as it follows your movements and it mimics you. Like, there's so many weird things that can happen now with that kind of stuff. But the idea is the life into the image of the beast and that the image of the beast should both speak and then make everybody worship him. What kind of tech is that going to be? Well, that's where I want to kind of get into some of the stuff. While there's been a lot of stuff going on in Israel, and we talked a lot about that with Steve last time, we'll get back to that a little later tonight. But I wanted to take some time with a little bit of a technology update. Some big things snuck in that do contribute to Bible prophecy, if you ask me. And it's worth noting and watching. AI tech is moving at breakneck speed, which is really important to understand. And so when I talk to people, I get a sense that most people think, what's AI really gonna do? And a lot of people, you're either kind of one of the people that are really in the know about this, you know, it could destroy the whole world, or you're like, so you can watch cartoons, like big deal. It's way more than that. Let me just do a few things to kind of get you up to speed on AI tech. Who knew that Will Smith eating spaghetti would be the benchmark for AI? Have you guys seen this? It's all about Will Smith. Somewhere the AI people thought, let's make Will Smith eat spaghetti, even though he didn't really do it. So let me just show you how far we've come in 12 months with that little assignment that they've been given. Here's Will Smith, and it's not really Will Smith, but he's eating spaghetti. This was 12, the one to your left there was 12 months ago AI. Trying to create Will Smith eating spaghetti. The one on the right is just 12 months later. That's not really Will Smith. That's just that's a pretty good iteration. Hopefully it doesn't slap you. But if you're not familiar with AI, you might be saying, "What's the big deal?" So we've been animating video for years. Well, let me help demonstrate that just a little bit. So here's the difference. Here's what's going on. So like these are interesting reliefs, stone, reliefs that were ancient Persepolis, which is in ancient Iran. These are famous stone reliefs from ancient stones and what have you. So how does it work? Well, you go to your AI, machine, and you basically give it a sentence. Let me tell you what this sentence basically said. It said, make an animation walk off the stone of the reliefs that are in Persepolis, ancient Iran. Make them walk off the screen in a video. And 2 seconds later, you get this right here. This is in 2 seconds. You give them this. You write in the sentence, say, "I want these stones just to walk off the reliefs of in Iran." This is what you get in 2 seconds. It's not a person creating a video. It's AI creating this video, which is that kind of helps you understand. This is what in just a matter of seconds. Now, I'll admit it takes processing power. Energy. It takes a lot of stuff that some of our own personal computers don't really have the power. But if you give it enough power, what can it do? Here's somebody who wrote a quick sentence about the ancient Roman busts. This is Trajan, and basically one sentence: take the Trajan statue from Rome and turn it into a real person. And so that's not a real person you're looking at there talking. That's just an AI depiction. In 2 seconds, it'll cough that up. Do you ever wonder what Julius Caesar looked like? Well, this is that's the statue in Rome, and this is the AI version of Julius Caesar. Caesar Nero was the one I was really excited to see because he's kind of described as a slimy, pasty guy with red hair. He was a tiny little guy, but his stench was really bad. So AI, they said, make a real person out of the bust of Nero. And here you go, there it is. AI did a pretty good job because he was Looney Tunes, to say the least. But telling AI to just do something with just a sentence of text, and then it reproduces. Like for example, you all remember the Microsoft field background, right? You guys have had that. Some of you have seen way too much of that. But you can just write a sentence. Make take the Microsoft Windows background image and make a drone flight over the field. And in 2 seconds, here you go. It's just like the for us to try to do that artificially ourselves without AI, that'd be a tall order to do that. AI does that in a matter of seconds. You're going to see this year where people are going to add to their photos characters and cartoons and all kinds of things, because in a matter of seconds, you can have a little blue gremlin with an orange mohawk with a giant anteater on the beach. Like crazy stuff. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. Some of you are like, Brett, whatever. Whatever, Pastor Brett, who cares if there's a blue gremlin on your shoulder so people can use AI to have Will Smith eat spaghetti? Harmless, no big deal. Well, that's wrong. I wanna tell you, you know, what we've been watching here about AI, we're actually watching the beginnings of what it can do, and we haven't even, this is just something that most of us with little tiny brains can get our brain around. Oh, wow, that's kind of amazing. It's the stuff that most of us in this room probably can't fathom that AI, that's where it gets a little more concerning. The potential for danger is over the top. Microsoft's just came out just 2 weeks ago. This is important to know. They came out with their marijuana. I was gonna say, you Portlanders are gonna have to watch. Cool, Microsoft's making marijuana. No, their new chip is called Majorana 1 chip, which carves a new path for quantum computing. You see, AI, with our computers, AI can do some pretty amazing things. But what could it do with a quantum computer? That's what we have to start kind of thinking about. What's a quantum computer? There's a bunch of people working on them, but Microsoft came through with a big breakthrough just 2 weeks ago. They've been working on this for 17 years. It's the longest project they've done anything in Microsoft in the history of the company. This is the longest project before they really unveiled it in their history. They can fit 1 million bits. You don't really call them bits though. When you're talking quantum computing, you call them qubits. You can fit 1 million qubits to a chip. That's the size of a like your wallet that's folded in your hand. That's the Microsoft, quantum Majorana 1 chip that they're getting ready to release and produce. Quantum computing will allow engineers and scientists, companies, and others to simply design things right for the first time, which would be transformative. Everything from healthcare to product development to inventing new things. Invention's a big one. Quantum computing will allow invention that would normally take a lot of power and computing and years even. The quantum computer is gonna make things a lot faster. The power of quantum computing combined with AI tools, where you have AI interworking with quantum computing, would allow someone to, like for example, if you wanted to design a new kind of metal that was less prone to cracking over time, the quantum computer could work on that and come up with perhaps a whole new substance, a whole new metal and ingredients that you need and how you should temper it and all that. It'll come up with the whole process of how to make something. But here's the thing, they're saying you won't even have to test it because the quantum computer can come up with something and sort of test it in its I'm using really weak terms here, but in its own processes. So there's no guesswork, there's no years of trial and error. One person in this said, any company that makes anything could just design it perfectly for the first time out. It would just give you the answer. The quantum computer teaches the AI the language of nature so that AI can just tell you the recipe for what you want to make. It's been said by these at Microsoft that what all the supercomputers in the world could accomplish in 1 year altogether, the quantum computer by itself can do in 2 minutes. 2 minutes and all the supercomputers we have today combined, it would take it a year to do 2 minutes of quantum work. I wanna show you an excerpt. This is actually a longer video. I just wanna show you a few minutes of it where Microsoft announces this 2 weeks ago. It's worth noting. I wanted you to see this. Here we go. Oops, I forgot to forward. Here we go.
What can you do with 1 million qubits? In the last few years, there's an explosion of artificial intelligence, right? Copilots. And what's so inspiring about a quantum computer is that with a quantum computer augmenting the AI capability, it can help more, drive even more discovery.
What makes me excited about quantum computing is that it will give us the tool to tackle many of these challenges at the fundamental level by creating new chemicals, new drugs, new enzymes for food production.
Honestly, it's kind of mind-blowing right now because this is something we've thought about for a while, years or more.
We call the ages of mankind by materials. We've talked about the Stone Age, we've talked about the Bronze Age and the Iron Age, the Steel Age, the Silicon Age. Materials define our culture, define our mankind, define our progress. Thus, what could be more powerful than having a machine that can let you radically change the way we work with materials?
Our leadership has been working on this program for the last 17 years. It is the longest running research program in the company. And after 17 years, when we are showcasing our results, we are showcasing results that are not just incredible, they're real. They're real because they will fundamentally redefine how the next stage of the quantum journey takes place.
We're at the cusp of a quantum age, and Majorana 1 is just the beginning.
So finally, there's a computer capable of running Microsoft Teams at full speed. Those of you that know, you know. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that. All that to say, Amazon just made also a similar announcement just last week about their quantum capabilities. You should be aware that China is working on this. Now, you know, those that know what this is, you know, they're saying this is going to be one of the greatest ages of human history, those that are, you know, creating this stuff. And what does that mean? We've had the Stone Age, the Bronze Age. You know, we've had the Industrial Age. We've had the Silicon Age, which we've been in for a long time. But they're saying this new age is going to be the Quantum Age, and it's going to change a lot, almost everything that we do. Which that's what they're boasting. Who knows? We'll see. But one of the things that I want to kind of say about this that always cracks me up is you'll always see Microsoft and Amazon and all these companies that are working on these quantum computers, China, they're always boasting of what it will be able to do. And it always says all these warm fuzzy, cure cancer, make new medicines and drugs and vaccines and all this stuff. Wonderful. How wonderful it's going to be. But if it can do all that stuff, is it possible it could do really bad, dastardly stuff too? Well, you don't even have to be very smart to understand that. Who's regulating what AI plus quantum computing? Who's regulating that? Who's gonna keep it under wraps? This is like one of those things where you start to wonder, I wonder if God is going to slow this down somehow, like he did at the Tower of Babel. Who knows? Because the implications are pretty interesting. One thing you should know is in the BBC article that came out just February 4th, DeepSeek, which is basically, you know, there's a bunch of different, AIs, ChatGPT, we'll talk more about those later, but DeepSeek is the Chinese one. And many of you have used a lot of these. How many of you guys have used AI to some way or another? Okay, about half. You're all going to hell. No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding. No. I've heard people say if you use AI, you're going to hell and you're going to get the mark of the beast and all that. No. That's not what the mark of the beast is. But BBC article, DeepSeek. This is kind of important because the Chinese, they finally released their app that has the world talking. DeepSeek, a Chinese artificial AI startup, made headlines worldwide after it topped app download charts and caused U.S. tech stocks to sink. By the way, it wiped billions of dollars off the market value of the chip, the giant chip, NVIDIA. Now, it did recover since then, but it was a big jolt on the markets when DeepSeek came out. The reason why is the latest model of DeepSeek, R1, it claimed to rival the technology developed by ChatGPT maker, OpenAI, and its capabilities. But it cost far less. In fact, They're saying they were able to do this for $6 million, which made the world kind of go, that's troublesome. Its popularity and potential rattled investors. President Donald Trump described it as a wake-up call to the U.S. companies. No one saw DeepSeek coming, so strong, and it's also free, and it's actually capable. How capable is still debatable, that's when Sam Altman, if you know who that is, picked up the telephone and contacted the president and waved the red flag and said, man, we cannot let the Chinese get ahead of us of this. Quantum computing combined with AI is always touted as something that's going to be beautiful, and it'll revolutionize various fields, the way they healthcare, material source, and even finance. They're boasting all these things, but they always leave out the weapons industry. Technology's always been fueled by man's desire to kill each other. Some of the greatest science that's been invented has been because we needed to kill people. And I'm saying that sort of, with a bit of sarcasm, but it really is true. What pushed the world to get to where we could split the atom? We had to destroy, nations and people and cities. And, that's all the way back to cavemen, getting technology of how to make a bow with a string and shoot an arrow. That's technology. But it really hasn't changed, even when it comes to this idea of quantum computers. What are the experts that really know saying are some concerns? It'd be great if we cured cancer and diseases and stuff like that. But here's what the big concerns are. Let me just give you somewhat of a list of that so you can be aware. Number one, cryptography vulnerabilities. Quantum computers have a potential to break widely used encryption models like RSA, ECC, those of you guys that know encryption and what have you, the secure, sensitive data that we have all over the world, quantum computing is going to be able to blow right through that, the experts say. So they're going to have to come up with a whole different system that they're concerned may or may not happen. Security protocols today will be obsolete when it comes to cybersecurity and stuff like that. Number two, data privacy concerns. With quantum enhanced AI, analyzing large data sets more efficiently may result in breaches of privacy. They're very concerned about that. Also, and this is an interesting one, it's a little hard to describe, but decision-making transparency. Quantum AI together may produce results that are difficult to interpret in their complexity. Have you heard how AI can determine when you're going to die and stuff like that? Or what political party you're going to be a part of? They're saying AI can figure out, are you going to die of cancer, or how are you going to die? What happens if AI does all that stuff and they just start arresting people before they even do the crime? Or saying, well, you're going to die next year, so we're going to, there's great concern that a lack of accountability and transparency. You say, whatever, I don't care about transparency with quantum computing, with AI. But in critical applications such as healthcare, criminal justice, where understanding the rationale behind the decisions that are made with AI and quantum are going to be foggy, but they need to be essentially understood. And that's one of the things that you and I should be thinking about. This coming world leader, Antichrist, you can almost see how someone who's wanting to control the world, we saw little bits of that, I think, in 2020 during the whole COVID crisis, where there was these draconian rules and they were lockdowns, and whether in China or even parts of the United States, they were basically keeping record and social passports and social scores and stuff. You kind of get a sense that Antichrist is going to want to employ that sort of thing. If you're not part of his team, you don't get a mark, and you don't get to buy or sell, and you'll eventually be beheaded unless you follow his plan. And let me just say, that's not a good way to get ahead. Anyway, sorry. You guys looked a little serious on this. So I needed to lighten the moment just a little bit. Now, number four concern is exacerbation of social inequalities. I already talked about the social score. Access to quantum computing and AI combined. you know, might be limited to more affluent or technologically advanced entities that have the money and the resources to use quantum computing, where some of us won't have that. Governments, big corporations, this could widen the gap. They're concerned about this. And these big companies and governmental agencies can leverage those technologies against those who cannot, which might exacerbate social and economic inequalities. Number five, this is a big one. We're already using AI for this. This is already happening. Autonomous weapons and warfare. Quantum AI could enhance military technologies and autonomous weapon systems, raising ethical concerns about decision-making in combat situations. One of the things that, you know, the Ukrainians have gotten really good at is making drones that for $500 that can destroy a, you know, $5 million tank or $20 million tank. And so the Russians have gotten really good at interrupting the signal between the drone controller and the drone itself, thereby disabling it. So then the Ukrainians are starting to get good at saying, we're not needing a connection between us and our drone anymore. They're autonomous. That's something you should know. It's basically, you know, a computer that's on its own, and it's going to choose with AI whether it's an enemy combatant or it's a friend or if it's a foe. They're already doing this. I showed you some videos of drones that were autonomous, and they can go many, many miles away from the actual controller and what have you. It's quite a deal to see this. So this idea of autonomous weapons, not only that, I mean, need we talk about, is it hard to imagine the Chinese using AI with quantum computing to create a biological weapon? It seems like they were maybe doing that back in you know, the 2020, the lab leak issue. What was going on there? You know, I'm not sure we really know, but would the Chinese use AI to make a very specific bio agent or something, biological weapon? AI is going to be able to create those kinds of things without even having to test it. That's what they're boasting, because the quantum power is going to be able to test it sort of digitally, if you know what I mean. Number six, another great concern of those that are some of the creators, by the way, of AI, they're getting out. They're saying, we're out. We don't like where this is going. There's no regulation. These are our concerns. One is misinformation and manipulation. Do you get a sense we're being manipulated? Getting a little misinformation? Advanced AI powered by quantum computing could be used to create realistic, fake content. I already showed you, videos and stuff, but audio, text, messaging, all that's going to be way more convincing as we get further down, leading to misinformation campaigns, manipulation of public opinion, further destabilizing societies. Do you get a sense where that's happening today? I guarantee it's happening today, and I can prove it personally. You want to see proof positive? Were any of you guys looking at your phone February 25th, just a few weeks ago, they're calling it a glitch in the Apple iPhone. And what happened was, if you got on like a text message or wherever you're using, dictation system of your iPhone, where you push the little microphone and you start speaking, it's supposed to type out the text. There was a little glitch that happened. If you said the word racist, it would flash the word Trump in the line. Did you guys see that? Okay, let me show you. I did it with my phone. And here, this is a screenshot of my own phone. I spoke, okay, you'll see me push the microphone button here. See the little mic button in the bottom? As soon as that lights up, I'll say the word racist. I'll say racist. Did you see how it flashed Trump there? Here, watch again. So that was the glitch that Apple, when you said racist in your phone, it would go Trump and then racist. It's like subliminal. Man, I kind of think Trump's a racist. Now, those of you that are out there that think Trump's a racist, maybe you should think how much of that you're thinking that way. See, because I know Trump's got some bad characteristics, and he's a sinful guy. And I'm not. Those of you who know me, I like a lot of Trump's policies and what he's doing. He's kind of an amazing guy, but he's also a sinner, and I'm embarrassed by some of the things he does and says. But it's funny how he got more African American votes than anybody in recent years, and Mexican Americans, and it's like it's amazing how the races are kind of like, wow. In a lot of ways, they're not seeing that. I wonder how much of what we know today, like when you see this huge divide in our country, it makes you kind of wonder how much of that has been through process of subliminal messaging. You know, here they failed. Now, what's laughable about this, on the 25th of February, an Apple spokeswoman blamed the issue on phonetic overlap between the two words. I don't think she knows what phonetic means. Trump, racist. They're not very similar, but she said the company was working on the fix, and I think they fixed it. So if you're trying to make that happen on your phone, that's why I can say, you know, AI, and by the way, this is the AI function of your iPhone. If you have a later version of iPhone, this is the AI function that's trying to hear and determine what you're thinking and saying and talking about. So it's an anticipation. So pretty interesting. Well, all that to say, back to our list here. Number 7 on our list, disruption of economic systems. Man, I'm running out of time. I got to hurry up. You know, markets being disrupted by enabling more effective and aggressive trading algorithms. Like those of you that trade, which I don't, so I'm not super clear on this, but basically people are going to get an edge with trading if they have access to quantum computing and AI. It'll also create volatility. Additionally, industries that do not adapt to these technologies may face significant challenges. Number 8, just 2 more, lack of regulation and ethical frameworks. The rapid pace of development of quantum computing and AI combo may outstrip the establishment of adequate legal and ethical frameworks. I think we're already there. I think we're way behind on knowing what is going to be, acceptable, legal. You know, there's already really perverted, crazy things. One of the things that Trump signed as an executive order, trying to get rid of these, revenge porn fakes of people, posting people that they know online naked and stuff like that, or doing horrible things. It's already out there, and we haven't been able to regulate those horrible things. That's only going to get worse and more convincing as time goes by. Number 9, and this one might seem a little conspiracy theory, maybe not. But existential risks. Now, the world uses existential like it's a banana cream pie. It's like, what is existential? It means it could wipe out all of humanity. So, Brett, are you suggesting a Terminator thing where intelligence and machines get smarter than us and don't allow us to turn them off, and they just get stronger and pretty soon wipe out humanity? Pretty much. I'm not saying that, by the way. I'm not saying that. The inventors of these things are saying that. It's not me. So it's not exactly conspiracy theory. And it goes back to 8, the lack of regulation and ethical frameworks. This technology is moving fast. And I showed you Will Smith from 1 year and how much better it became in 1 year. It's not just the pictures and the movies and the cartoons. It's the technology and the weaponry and the AI getting smarter, exponentially smarter as it learns from itself. And they're concerned that these risks are getting very high and safety measures are not in place where, it could be, if you got enough drones and weapons and military equipment, that's all, it's all, autonomous, like I was just talking about. And suddenly AI takes control of all those weapons and we can't really know how to shut that down or whatever. That could be a problem. Forbes article, AI is already showing signs of things that are a little bit almost mischievous. Now, I know that I'm trying to put human traits to machinery and quantum chips and all that, but this is Forbes magazine, and this is some of the stuff they're concerned. AI hiding emergent human values that include AI survival topping human lives. In other words, there's already been evidence of AI sort of having an attitude saying that its existence is as important as human existence, maybe even tops human existence. That was a recent discovery about generative AI, which is the one where it learns of itself, generative AI, and it's a large language model, LLM. Might be a bit of a shocker for many people if they realize that, we already know and seek to deal with exhibited biases within an AI. AI has already shown bias in shocking levels, and it's something that we're still trying to figure out scientifically. Sunday Guardian article, AI race in the Trump era is all about markets and ideologies. The dictum, whoever rules AI shall rule the world. Does anybody know who said that? Vladimir Putin, he said that 10 years ago. He said, whoever dominates and rules AI will rule the world. What is interesting about that is they're all saying that's actually true. Nearly, that was a decade ago when Vladimir made the statement. The modes through which AI is shaping the contours of evolving geopolitics is increasingly becoming apparent. So ChatGPT, OpenAI, Grok 3, DeepSeek, which is the Chinese one, they are all moving quickly. And one of the things they're doing is they're leapfrogging over each other crazily every week. Every week, these AI models are basically growing at exponential level. It's dizzying, and so you kind of have to kind of be aware of what that's going to mean, the weapons of war, and what's going to happen with AI. We're already seeing a lot of crazy stuff there. We'll talk about what we should do about that in a little bit. Well, moving from tech, I wanted to get you filled in on some of that. I hope I didn't bore you to death with some of that, but it is something to watch for sure. The next thing I want to kind of shift gears and talk about are the latest developments in Israel. Israel's the epicenter of Bible prophecy. That's why I always like to dabble in what's going on in Israel. We spent a lot of time talking about it last time with Steve, the tour guide, had a great time last time. If you missed it, it was interesting. I got some comments on Google about Gaza Lago. That was our title of last one. And this one guy ranted on Google and gave us a 1-star rating on Google because something about how Brett's way too political and, you know, he doesn't even teach the Bible anymore. And his sermon was horrible. And I'm just telling you, this is not a sermon. Prophecy Update, hello. It's not a sermon. If you're thinking, looking for a sermon, go to Sunday, Wednesday, Saturday night. I do, for every one Prophecy Update, I do like 24 sermons in the Bible. So just a little self-defense there on that one. And you can keep your 1-star. But he was all mad about that I talk about LGBTQ. I mean, it's obviously there's a different worldview there, but it is interesting how even Christian people sometimes they say, you shouldn't talk about Bible prophecy, it's too divisive. No, Bible prophecy is 1/4 of this book, and any good pastor will talk about Bible prophecy and not apologize for that. I think that's important to know. Well, Israel is the very epicenter of all things Bible prophecy. Few developments that have happened. There have been a few more hostages returned, and the Hamas are not doing themselves any favor. Like they've done such dastard. The way they transfer these hostages over, it's despicable. I'm not even going to go into it. It's so horrible. These little babies they put in the coffins, and then they lock them with big locks and give the keys to the coffin locks and give it. And then when it gets to Israel, the keys don't even work in the locks. And like they're just, everything they're doing is just to rub it in the face of the Jews. Meanwhile, still turning hostages over the world goes, well, at least they're giving the bodies back or the hostages back. It's horrifying. But just to sort of understand where we're at right now, we know that there are 24 living hostages that remain in Hamas control, as well as 35 dead hostages that they hope to recover the remains. Trump continues to sort of give some mandates about the hostages. Just a couple days ago, Trump, said to Hamas, the final warning, he said to Iran-backed Hamas terrorist group, he says, Shalom Hamas, which means hello and goodbye. And Trump says, you choose. Is this hello or is this goodbye? Trump wrote on his social media account on March 5th. He said, release all the hostages now, not later, and immediately return all the dead bodies of the people you murdered, or it is over. Capital O, capital V, capital E, capital R. Over for you. He continued denouncing Hamas as sick and twisted. Trump stated that he was sending Israel everything it needs to finish the job and that not a single Hamas member will be able to be safe if you don't do as I say. Trump's statement came after he had a meeting in the with former Israeli hostages in the Oval Office, during which they praised the president's efforts. These hostages, did you watch this on the news? These hostages were, they weren't really as much even thankful, it seemed to me, like to Netanyahu and Israel. They were there to say, we are thankful to Donald Trump for his strength. They all believe it was through Trump being hard-nosed with Hamas, that they all made it back safe. Very sad story. They praised the president for his efforts. Phase one of the January 19th ceasefire deal expired on March 1st. That's worth noting. Both sides have failed to reach an agreement to begin the deal's second phase, which stipulates an end to the hostilities to complete withdrawal of Israeli troops while leaving Hamas in control of Gaza. So it's really dubious right now, the ceasefire. Israel is gearing up to go back into battle with Gaza because they're saying the Hamas has not reached their made their commitments. The Hamas are falsely accusing Israel of not keeping their commitments. But when Trump says we set them up with the right weaponry, man, we sure did. Rubio uses emergency waiver. U.S. Secretary of State Mark Rubio said on March 1st that he had used emergency authorities provided in U.S. law to expedite delivery of roughly $4 billion in military assistance to Israel and gave them the kind of bombs that only we could give them that will dig out and root out Hamas. So, you know, again, we're the friend of Israel, the United States, which is really good biblically, Bible prophecy galore. Those who care about and love Israel are going to be blessed. Those who treat Israel badly are going to be cursed. I think America's been cursed for the last several years, largely because of the way we've treated Israel. But I think as long as we're blessing Israel, that's worth noting. A noteworthy article, Jay Feed article. This is giant. Senior American official, Trump administration considering Gaza plan for Judea and Samaria. Did you guys see this? This is really interesting. You know, Trump, the reason they absolutely love Trump in Israel, name streets after him, billboards are in. When I was last there, they had the Trump train and stuff going up and stuff. They actually have a train, the Trump line in Jerusalem, but. Why do they love him so much? Well, first of all, he said the capital of Jerusalem, or Israel's Jerusalem. No American president. They all talked about doing that for decades and decades. Oh, someday we'll call Jerusalem the capital, but no, it's not. And all the other presidents were afraid to do that because they thought the world would freak out and, you know, there'd be bombings of the terrorists and stuff like that. Trump just did it. He said, Jerusalem has always been the capital, and we recognize, and he moved our embassy, you know, from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. And the Jews, you know, as Americans, like, so what? It's a building, who cares? No. The Jews saw that as America saying Jerusalem is belongs to the Jews. It's a Jewish city. It's called Jerusalem. So, not really. I just am making that part up. But they loved that. Not only that. Do you remember when Trump said the Golan Heights? He said that belongs to Israel. That was another contested. They call that the occupied territories. But Trump said nope. Israel won that fair and square. They were being attacked by the Arab nations. Israel defended themselves and gained, defensive land that nobody wants to live on, the Golan Heights. I've been up to the Golan Heights tons of times. And it's a war-torn, there's still landmines everywhere in the Golan Heights. Cows get blown up all the time because they walk over landmines over there. But if you take away the Golan Heights, it leaves Israel very vulnerable to attack from Syria and Lebanon, to say the least. But a senior American official said that with Gaza plan, as they're calling it, they want to apply that to Judea and Samaria, otherwise wrongly really called the West Bank. In the Bible, it's called the Mountains of Israel. Whenever you come across that phrase in the Bible, the Mountains of Israel, that's what the world calls the West Bank. And they say that is occupied territory by the Jews. The Bible says God gave them that land. So it's very controversial. There's a lot of people saying that doesn't belong to the Jews. And they're making settlements in these areas. Trump is considering saying, we're going to do the same thing I told you and proposed about Gaza. Remember, the United States coming in and making it a resort or whatever, Gaza Lago. Now he's suggesting we should do that for Samaria and Judah as well, Judea. Now, you might say, why is he doing that? Is Trump just asking for more trouble? Are the Arabs going to flip out and be angry? Well, they're already flipped out and angry, and they have been for a long time. Could it be that Trump is actually calling them out? Is he actually calling their bluff? Just like he did with Gaza. Do you remember what Steve and I were talking about a month ago when we were saying, what's Trump's real game plan? And we talked about how he's the pendulum. He comes up with a plan over here, not to get over here, but to get maybe over here. And that's the way, maybe you call it the art of the deal. So he said, hey, people were freaked out. Trump says, America's going to take over Gaza. We're going to invest our money and effort and time. You know, Israel's going to sweep it all out and get all the bad things out. Then we're going to take it over. Well, do you think the Arab nations want America firmly planted in Gaza? Trump had a plan. And Steve and I were talking about, could it be that he's trying to call these Arab nations that could care less about the Palestinians? They act like they care about them, but they could care less. They've not lifted a pinky. Egypt will not let Palestinians come into their country, even though, you know, Jordan of all places, that's where the Palestinians are really from. The world likes to call them Palestinians. Most of them are actually technically Jordanian people, if you follow their lineage and heritage. Palestinians didn't exist in the way that they are today until modern, some of your lifetimes. If you're an older person here, you remember when Jews called themselves Palestinians back in the 1930s and earlier and what have you. Well, so what's this all about? Some are saying Trump's doing the same thing. He's saying, I'm going to say a statement like I did about Gaza. And what happened with Gaza? Well, did you see this BBC article? You can read this on any of the news agencies, but I thought that the BBC did a good job with this one. Arab leaders approve $53 billion alternative plan to Trump's Gaza plan. Suddenly the Arabs care about the Palestinians, suddenly. This article says a $53 billion reconstruction plan to rival President Donald Trump's idea for the U.S. to take over Gaza and move out more than 2 million Palestinians has been approved by Arab leaders at an emergency summit in the Egyptian capital of Cairo. So a question for y'all here. Why are they here all of a sudden talking about how they're going to take the Palestinians and make Gaza their own and stuff? For decades, the Egyptians and the Arabs could care less about the plight of the Palestinians. They were simply pawns to be used to hate Israel and to give an excuse to fight and kill Israelis. This is laughable. Like, you might see Trump sitting in the Oval Office going, ha, my plan is working perfectly. Because suddenly the Arabs are saying, hey, let's get all the Palestinians out of there, we'll pay for it. Steve and I predicted this, not prophetically, just because we were putting the pieces together. So Israel, watch what's going on with the Arabs and all that stuff. Israel's in an interesting spot right now. And, you know, are they gonna go back into Gaza? That's the thing to watch right now, because this ceasefire is breaking down. It was over, phase one of it was over March 1st. We're on a little bit of an extension into March without moving into phase two. So that is noteworthy, and we'll have to watch that as we get further down the road. Let's shift gears a little bit again to global arms race. One thing you should note as a Bible prophecy student is the world is arming up like never before. We are in a global arms race, which is really something. And it's caused by several interesting things recently. One thing that, you know, maybe you saw Trump talk about when he addressed Congress the other night, and this is from Space News article, Space Force General Golden Dome Missile Shield requires Manhattan Project scale effort. Of course, the Manhattan Project was the intensity that we put into coming up first with the atomic bomb for the nuclear warfare. They're saying it's gonna take that same kind of a think tank and dollar amount to come up with a golden dome. Not the Iron Dome is what Israel has, and we helped them develop that. But we need a golden dome. And what's that gonna do? It's gonna be a missile defense initiative launched by Donald Trump. General Michael Gutlian, Vice Chief of Space Operations in the U.S. Space Force, said the ambitious project known as Golden Dome represents a significant challenge that demands unprecedented collaboration across defense and intelligence agencies. We are in full planning mode, he said, March 5th, just a couple days ago, at the National Security Innovation Base Summit hosted by Ronald Reagan Institute. He said, we owe an answer back to the White House by the end of the month of what our thoughts are. So Golden Dome would be a comprehensive shield, sort of like Iron Dome is for Israel, but it's got to be more high tech than that, because Iron Dome doesn't get the ballistic supersonic cruise missiles. They need to make a dome for the United States that will get these super high-speed advanced cruise missiles. The system's core components would include space-based sensors, missile interceptors, and it would also include AI and probably quantum computing. So this is what we're talking about. The Telegraph article says this: China says it's ready for war with America. Does that make anybody nervous? This is Xi Jinping saying we're ready to go to war with America, as they're just threatening down there in Taiwan and going through all kinds of little military maneuvers and building islands for their own military weapons. China said it's ready for war with America, and it raised its defense spending and imposed retaliatory tariffs on U.S. imports. In a direct threat to Donald Trump, China's representatives in America said if war is what the United States wants, it'll be a tariff war, a trade war, or any other type of war. We're ready to fight until the end. Pete Hegseth, the U.S. Defense Secretary, said in turn, U.S. is prepared to go to war with China. Now, some of you might think, oh, those are just words, but that's how wars start. It starts with words and threats and stuff like that. And we're seeing that. China is getting really geared up for war. Chinese President Xi Jinping, there in at his opening session, right in this picture, National People's Congress in Beijing, just 2 days ago, Premier Li Qiang announcing a 7.2% increase in their defense spending for 2025. Beijing is the second largest military spender after the United States. It already has the world's largest navy, but the increase, which brings China's defense budget to roughly $246 billion, highlights Beijing's geopolitical priorities. Not only China, but Europe. What has made Europe suddenly joining the arms race? Anybody have a guess on that? What'd you say? Ukraine? Yes, but there's a single event that really made Europe nervous. U.S. withdrawing possibly from NATO. I'm going to say you're getting closer. In my opinion, it was a meeting between Zelensky and Trump. That freaked the world out. The world was freaked out. The United States were freaked out. Some of you were freaked out by that. Social media freaked out. What happened? Like, when do we see in the Oval Office the president of one country get in there and they almost got in like a wrestling? There was some AI. Did you guys see the AI where they went to fighting and punching each other? It looked real. It looked real. But suddenly the United States is saying, not only are we don't like your attitude and we're not going to be a part of this. We want peace. Now, you can hate Trump or love him or hate, think, depending on your worldview on the Ukrainian-Russian thing, which is a very confusing conflict. I think most Americans don't have a clue anything about what's going on with Ukraine and Russia. I've spent a lot of time talking to my Ukrainian brothers and sisters here in our church. I bumped into a pastor up in Vancouver, a Slavic pastor, Russian church in Vancouver, big Russian church. And he said, oh, Pastor Brett, I know about Athey Creek. And he said, we were talking there. And he said, you know what the pastors, all the Russian churches around here say, the biggest Slavic church in the Portland area is Athey Creek. And it's kind of funny because we have a lot of Slavic people in our church, which we're so thankful for. But one of the things that I love to talk to my Slavic brothers and sisters about is what they think about the Ukraine, because we have Ukrainians and Russians and we have East Ukraine and West Ukraine. And the one thing that I figured out is it's very complex and there's a ton of corruption on both sides. And it's really hard for people that say, well, Russia attacked Ukraine. And so that makes it all, Russia attacked Ukraine. That was horrible. And I'm not gonna say that was a good thing at all. It's a really bad thing. But there's other parts of that. In my opinion, who's really mostly at fault for Russia attacking Ukraine? The United States of America, starting way back with Bill Clinton. And our behavior with NATO and the nuclear weapons deals we've made, and whether we kept our word or not, it's only made the problem there worse. I think it's funny how Americans sanctimoniously sit around and say, those Ukrainians, those Russians, they just have to deal with their problem. We have created, if you know the geopolitics of the whole thing, we've created a lot of the problem over there. And I think it's sad that so many Americans have no clue about that. Well, what happened after that meeting with the United States threatening, hey, we may pull out of the whole Ukrainian peace talk situation, and we might even pull out of NATO. Where are the European nations without the United States? The United States is 80% of the NATO budget. They've been trusting the United States since World War II to protect them and be there, you know, for us to send our soldiers and our weapons to protect Europe. And yet Europe still hates us. It's like we've been saying, yeah, we'll help protect you. We're part of a treaty that we've made. But the idea of Trump getting out, I'm not saying it's a good or bad thing. I'm not even going to get into the politics of that. I'm just going to say what's happening. Well, suddenly you got Friedrich Merz, Germany's likely next chancellor. He wants to massively increase defense spending all of a sudden. Germany's set for a massive rearmament as divide with U.S. widens. This comes from the AFP Berlin. Germany's set up to ramp up defense spending with their incoming government saying it wants to invest hundreds of billions of euros to bolster Europe's security as U.S. guarantees look increasingly fragile. So not only is there an arms race typically between China and Russia and the United States, that's been going on forever. But now you got a bunch of other nations, all the European nations and others, Pakistan, Iran, other places, like the arms race is all over the world, Iran. And the arms race is different than just nuclear. It really leans into what we started with, artificial intelligence, autonomous systems, quantum technologies, sensors with continuous global coverage in space, hypersonic missiles, high precision and maneuverable weapon systems. They're rapidly being developed. And again, technology is figuring out ways to kill each other faster than ever. It's not about Will Smith eating spaghetti. Are you guys getting my drift? EU pitches $800 billion plan to rearm Europe as Trump suspends military aid to Ukraine. That's the European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen. Real problem. EU is building its own army as well, which is kind of interesting. Those of you know the 10 toes and the prophecies of out of the old Roman Empire will come a 10-nation confederation. This is something to watch, how EU, especially if the United States pulls out, it pulls them out of their slumber where they have to suddenly defend themselves and come up with their own army. If NATO's not going to be with the United States, they're going to have to figure out their own thing. Some Bible prophecy folks are saying, could this be one of the catalysts that get those nations, which the coming world leader, Antichrist, the little horn, is going to come out of that. So I know I'm talking shorthand with you guys about the prophecies about the 10-nation confederation. We've done, listen to our Daniel chapter 2 teaching from last time we were in Daniel 2, and there's a few other places we've talked about that. But in an independent article, Trump warns Zelensky, you're gambling with World War III. Gambling with World War III. Is Donald Trump being hyperbolic with that? All the experts say that is not hyperbolic. That's not exaggeration. The heated exchange between Zelensky and Trump, it's true. Trump does things. He says things in ways that you don't know. Is he right or wrong? Is he crazy? Does he know what he's talking about? But one of the things that a lot of people are seeing in Trump, he comes off a little cray cray, but he's been right more than he's been wrong about a lot of these crazy things. And it's hard. I can see why some people get kind of freaked out by Trump and what he's doing as our president. But at the same time, the experts, and I have a whole bunch of things here I was going to go into, but I'm not, I don't think I have time tonight. But what's the world saying? The world, we are headed at breakneck speed toward World War III. By the way, sideline, there's a difference between how all of our presidents act. They all, you know, I've been recently kind of reading biographies of Teddy Roosevelt. What an interesting character he was. He was a character of a president. But we've had characters, you know. But Trump is going to go right up there with a different personality. He kind of operates differently. Somebody put a little difference between Obama, kind of A-B comparison of Obama and Trump. And he compares, both of them gave a little talk about killing a terrorist. Let's A-B that. Let's see how Obama talked about killing a terrorist and Trump. Here we go. Let's show that.
The United States has conducted an operation that killed Osama bin Laden.
Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. is dead.
The United States launched a targeted operation against that compound.
They did a lot of shooting, and they did a lot of blasting, even not going through the front door. You know, you think you go through the door. If you're a normal person, you say, knock, knock, may I come in?
After a firefight, they killed Osama bin Laden and took custody of his body.
He died like a dog.
But his death does not mark the end of our effort.
A beautiful dog. A talented dog.
We give thanks for the men who carried out this operation.
And I don't get any credit for this, but that's okay. I never do. But here we are.
May God bless you. And may God bless the United States of America.
And I'm writing a book. I think I wrote 12 books. All did very well.
Just a little A-B comparison of the same exact sort of thing. Don't get mad at me. You guys are out there, the bloggers and stuff. That was an accurate representation of the way presidents act differently. And you might even say, I don't care what your opinion is. My point is, Trump's a different, very different than anything we've had in times past. But the thing that you need to understand is this thing that happened in the White House is giant as far as the implications to the world. The whole world is kind of shaken by what happened with Zelensky. I have a long list, the collapse of NATO is being speculated. People are talking about America is imposing tariffs on European goods and considering halting military aid to Ukraine. I'm not saying whether that's good or bad. I'm just saying this is why the world's kind of freaking out. European leaders met in London describing the situation as a pivotal moment for the continental security of Europe. Europe shows unity but relies heavily on American influence, which contributes 80% to NATO's budget. Europe may need to build its own military. European leaders urged Zelensky to reconcile. That's what's happening out of this. See, you know how we showed you the Gaza thing and how Trump's going, my plan is working perfectly. Suddenly got Europeans, the leaders saying, Zelensky, go back to the White House and figure it out with Trump because we need him too. Like, could this all be part of Trump's plan? I know the world, they don't think he's that smart generally, but I think he's smarter than he looks. And he's basically getting the Europeans saying, Zelensky, get back in there. And Zelensky wrote him a letter basically saying, I'm ready to sign the deal that he was going to sign last week. I'm ready to come back, So that's something to watch. Is this Trump does he really have kind of the art of the deal going here? The conclusion really, in a nutshell, the geopolitical landscape is shifting with Europeans facing potential security challenges deadly. Putin is saber-rattling or nuclear-rattling. Europeans are kind of freaking out about that. Their European reliance on American military has put them in a bit of a lethargy. And now that Trump's kind of saying, you guys haven't paid your fair share and it's time for you guys to take, maybe you should build up your militaries. That's freaking everybody out, which is kind of interesting. With the present global arms race, because of that, everybody's going arms. Germans, the British, everybody's creating new weaponry, which adds the question as I start to wrap tonight up, how close are we to World War III? That's something to be watching and thinking about. And is World War III, does it ultimately get to the Battle of Armageddon? Don't know. But you sure see the world in a place where there's what Jesus said, wars and rumors of wars. We're seeing that kind of exponentially right now. And people are, in fact, according to the Atlantic Council, which are experts on global strategies, their practitioners did a big study. 40% said they expected there to be another world war by 2035. Donald Trump has warned the conflict in Ukraine could escalate into World War III. And so these are really kind of dark and trying times. So I want to remind you of a few thoughts as we close tonight, because some of this is quantum computing, weapons, World War III. These are some troubling things. But when we study Bible prophecy, it's not doom and gloom. It's boom and zoom. We got to remember what the real deal is. We're looking forward to heaven. These are all signs of the coming of Christ and the rapture of the church. This is something we can, while we're sad for the world, and we know we should be busy preaching the gospel, and that's what we do here at Athe, more than we do Prophecy Update by far. We preach the gospel. And that's what we need to kind of do. And part of it's remembering what the real battle is. Remember Ephesians 6:12, for we wrestle not against flesh and blood, the Russians, the Ukrainians, the Europeans and China. But there's spiritual powers against principalities, against powers, rulers of darkness in this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. So we as Christians, more than worrying about what's going on militarily, we should be given to the ministry of prayer and praying for the nation. 2 Chronicles 20:15, thus saith the Lord unto you, be not afraid nor dismayed by reason of this great multitude, for the battle is not yours, but God's. I think we could remember that one. So number one, remember, what's the real battle? It's a spiritual battle that this world is facing. And we as Christians should be all about the spiritual battle. Number two, don't forget, love is the key. I've talked about this just last week during the weekend services. You know, we can have our political views, but there's so much hate. I would say whatever side you're on, love is the key. You know, it doesn't matter if you're a Democrat or a Republican or progressive or conservative or European or American. Our Christian mantra is love. John 13:35, by this shall all men know that you are my disciples, if you have love one for another. Matthew 5:43-44, if you've heard that it has been said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But Jesus said, I say unto you, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you. So love is the key. Number one, what's the real battle? It's a spiritual battle. Number two, love is the key. Number three, don't be afraid. You know, Revelation 1:3 says, blessed is he that readeth and they that hear the words of this prophecy and keep those things which are written therein, for the time is at hand. The word blessed there means happy. It's funny how people don't want to read the book of Revelation because it freaks them out. It means they're reading it wrong. The right way of reading the book of Revelation makes you realize, wow, we're happy because we know the Lord is in control. He's seated upon the throne. He's not pacing back and forth in heaven going, what am I going to do with the world? The Lord knows exactly what's going on, and we can be blessed because we know that the words of the prophecy tell us exactly how it's going to go. And then lastly, number four, as we close, it's all about Jesus. Even prophecy, even Bible prophecy. It's not about Russia or Ukraine or about Trump or Biden or Putin or Zelensky. It's all about Jesus Christ. In fact, Revelation 19:10 says, worship God, for the testimony of Jesus is the spirit of prophecy. What's the testimony of Jesus? That he came to die for the sins of the world. He was crucified on the cross, was buried, and rose again. And anybody who accepts and believes Jesus, that's what Jesus is all about. Jesus, his testimony is the spirit of prophecy. So there it is. I just wanted to give you kind of a quick, kind of what's going on, things to watch. We could have talked for another 3 or 4 hours, but there's Cinnabon waiting. So let's pray. Let's pray. Lord, we're so thankful for your word and for just the reminders. Lord, these things we've talked about, all of which your word sort of gives us hints and warnings about things that would come. And we do see those things coming. So I pray that we'd keep it all about your son, Jesus. I pray that we would not be afraid, that even as Jesus said, don't let your hearts be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. Lord, help us to not be afraid. And Lord, I also pray that we'd make love always part of our discussion. Forgive us, forgive your church for being too prickly and too hateful about people that disagree with us. I pray that we'd be loving people. Lord, you know all things, if World War III is coming or if we have a lot of time yet. But I pray that whatever happens, we'd be busy about the work that we would occupy until you come. Help us with that, we pray. In Jesus' name, amen.